the show's success.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the Fukushima latent radiation island chain paradise, where everybody has a part-time job as an eco light bulb, which is good for the environment. And my very special guest is Penny Brighton. She's in Warpath mode, ladies and gentlemen. As always, that's why when she's mayor, she will not be called her worship. Oh, wait, actually, she will be called her worship rather than her worship. I messed that up massively. Penny, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Vinny. Thank you.
Now, you sent me an email, was it yesterday or this morning, saying that you need some funding to go to a conference or something?
Yes, I've got my airfare and accommodation sorted by, you know, you take money from the Powerbill and you use it to pay for your airfares and juggle it around. But basically what's happening is that from the 26th, 27th and 28th of November over the ditch in Sydney is the 2013 Australian Public Sector Anti-Corruption Conference. And I went to their conference back in 2009, and there about 500 delegates there and a lot of anti-corruption experts, and I can't underestimate, if you go to these conferences seriously wanting to learn stuff, that you can't beat them, because you've got the experts, you've got the workshops, you can listen, ask the hard questions, take away the written material, put your mind to it. And I would never have been able to draw up that action plan against corruption had I not been to that conference, and then a year later to the Transparency International Anti-Corruption Conference in 2010. So, but what I'm really looking forward to on this one is that I so want to blow the whistle on New Zealand. There's so much stuff. I mean, we're perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, and good God, I mean, it's the biggest pile of steaming proverbial you ever heard in your life. And
I would deduce from that the perception is not reality, as many have claimed.
Well, it's not, because the fact of the matter is that, and I mean, I've looked into this, Transparency International, sorry, but there's nothing transparent about the way that they compiled their data upon which their corruption perception index is based. It's based on subjective opinions of anonymous business people. Oh, like they used to go to the business roundtable. Oh, is New Zealand corrupt? No. Okay, tick.
That's like going to the Mafia Don of New York and going, hey, is there any mafia activity going on in the walk? No way.
Well, exactly. So the goal is that, I mean, these conferences aren't cheap, and I think they really should, you know, sort of make cheaper registration costs for self-funded public watchdogs who run on the smell of an oily rag, but so far they don't. So it's 2,000 Aussie dollars to register for the conference, which is on the 27th and 28th of November, but the day before, it's 870 for a full-day workshop. And what I've learned is it's the workshops where you do the mixy-mingly stuff, and that's where you get to ask a lot of questions and really get a much better in-depth understanding and get to know some of the people, because a number of the people that will be at this conference, I will have met a number of them 4 years ago, but this time when I go over there, it'll be on the basis that I got nearly 12,000 votes in Auckland, the biggest city in New Zealand, in an in-your-face campaign against corrupt corporate control. Now, there's usually heaps of media there, and hopefully some of the Aussie media might just be have a bit more gumption than our local ones, because one of the main things I want to make a huge fuss about is the Sky City money laundering bill, and I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. But honestly, from John Key down, there's been no due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering, and in my considered opinion, Sky City is setting up a money laundering in the heart of in the heart of Auckland City, and it's just outrageous. So anyway, go, folks, that's the go. If 150 people donate $20 each, I'm sorted. Now, that's not a really big ask, and I don't ask for money unless I need it, but I need it. Okay, so if you look on my website, which is www.pennybrightformayor.org.nz, I've got the bank, the Kiwi Bank account number there. I've checked with the electoral officer, and it's all good. I mean, you know, the election campaign is over, and there's no problem why using my mayoral website to do this. It's all good. So, help. Yeah, that would be great. Because compliments don't pay the bills, and they don't, yeah, they're not going to get me inside the conference. And it'll be the same with you, Vinny. I mean, you know, it's just we now need people to put a little bit of money where their mouths is if they support the work we do. When we need a hand and we ask for a hand, please, please help. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Go to www.pennybrightformayor. And what was it? pennybrightformayor.org.nz. And donate. There's a bank account number right there on the homepage for everybody to see. Donate today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So the latest thrilling developments with the Sky City money laundering bill. Well, we know the role of whistleblowers. I mean, look at what the wonderful stuff that dear friend Mr. Snowden's done, and of course...
Speaking of which, Penny, I wanted to get your opinion on this. WikiLeaks has leaked the TPP documents, and I watched the debate in the House last night between Winston Peters, one of the leaders of an opposition party, for those of you who are not in the know, and the on behalf of the Minister of Trade, Mr. Jerry Brownlee, who Winston Peters once called an illiterate woodshop teacher, incidentally. And what was interesting is that any reference to the leaked document was rejected in any way, shape, or form. We want to table this document. No, it's on WikiLeaks. Anybody can get it. We want to table this document. No, it's on WikiLeaks. Anybody can get it. But look at what this. Look at what this document says. Oh, it's from WikiLeaks. We don't comment on anything from WikiLeaks. It's just kind of like any information comes out at any point that is in any way damaging to scumbaggery, in terms of the national government, gets rejected and not answered or addressed in any way, shape, or form, regardless of the amount of supplementary questions that were asked, regardless of the fact that by saying we don't answer that, they class that as an answer. It is insane to even think for a moment that this party is not corrupt. It's just that freaking simple. I will not, under any circumstances, say or even entertain the possibility any longer that the National Party isn't corrupt.
Well, dead right. I mean, it's worse than willful blindness, because think of the wording Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. What sort of partnership completely excludes the public? What's that all about? I mean, the reality is that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is a treaty for investors. It's a treaty for big business. And what we've learnt since the Rogernomics neoliberal reforms in the mid-80s is that what is good for big business is not generally good for the majority of us. Fact. I mean, ask, you know, ordinary people just need to look at you know, their cost of living, their wage and salary rates. You know, where's the money going and who is benefiting? But in terms of the oldie but the goodie, the will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of government. Well, how on earth does that work when you've got all this top secret stuff which is going to potentially have a major effect on New Zealand as a sovereign nation? Unbelievable effect, and they all want to do it under cover of darkness. Well, good on Edward Snowden. It's absolutely marvellous what's being done. And that's the thing, yeah, that, you know, people who blow the whistle and get the facts out to the public, people really need to pay attention. And, I mean, people like in New Zealand, Vince Seymour, number one New Zealand whistleblower against judicial corruption. I mean, Vince has been jailed 4 times and he's never broken any law. My friend Grace Hayden, who for 8 years has been fighting the form of corruption known as state capture, where vested interests get their way at the policy level and manage to get laws passed that serve their interests. I mean, it's outrageous that people who are working in the public interest are being prosecuted and persecuted in this country, which purports to be the least corrupt in the world. Well, I tell you, when I'm in Sydney, boy, am I going to have fun.
Well, let's hope so. What occurs to me is that you mentioned Vince Seymour and Grace Hayden. Now, they're both actually really upstanding, respectable citizens, as far as I know. Vince Seymour, a prominent businessman, and Grace Hayden, former 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand Police. And yet, when we have a look at how they get treated, it's almost as if they're drug dealers or gang members or some kind of awful criminal that needs to be shut away because they're just that dangerous to society.
Well, what gets me is effectively the truth is incredibly subversive. I don't know if I told you, but I do finally have a response back from the Privacy Commission. You know, I made a complaint because I wanted to know whether or not I was one of the 88 New Zealanders who'd been unlawfully spied upon by the GCSB. And
Penny, did anybody actually, because they broke the law and admitted that they broke the law, did anybody in any way, shape or form get punished for illegally surveilling people?
Well, as I understand it, Kim.com, I understand that there is a prosecution happening against the GCSB. I don't have the details of it, but, I mean, a huge thank you to Kim.com because had it not been for him, we would never have discovered this stuff. But on that issue, let's remember that Kim.com, not only did Ofcans, Organised and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, unlawfully engage the services of the GCSB to spy on Kim.com, not only did Ofcans have a police raid of nearly 80 on the Kim.com mansion, but Ofcans, one of the things they charged Kim.com with was money laundering. And yet, when you look at the Official Information Act reply I got from Ofcans, when it comes to the far more real and credible threat of money laundering at the Sky City money laundering factory that they're setting up the road in Auckland City, they did nothing. How that works?
You know, what's interesting, Penny, is that I've been looking into the mentality of psychopaths, and often when a psychopath accuses somebody of something, it's usually because they themselves are the ones committing said crime, and they're just accusing you of it to throw the scent off themselves.
I'd just like to go, if we've got a little bit of time here, to read again this absolutely platinum smoking gun Official Information Act reply from Ofcans, Organised and Financial Crime Agency New Zealand, dated the 13th of August, because when I asked for copies of all or any information Ofcans has provided for the New Zealand International Convention Centre Bill, otherwise known as the Sky City Money Laundering Bill, sorry, or any related regulatory impact report or statement regarding the increase of money laundering, their reply was, quote, Ofcans has not supplied any information on this issue, nor do we hold such information. The request is therefore refused on the basis that the information request is not held by Ofcans pursuant to blah, blah, blee, blee of the Official Information Act. So they never supplied any info. But then I sought information which confirms that the views of Ofcans, don't forget that the Organised and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand is the lead agency in New Zealand that's supposed to be fighting money laundering. Okay, I asked for information which confirms that the views of Ofcans on the increased risk of money laundering were sought by any of the following parties: the Department of Internal Affairs, the Ministry of Economic Development, Sky City, the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet, the office of the Prime Minister, Cabinet, any Cabinet Minister, in particular Stephen Joyce, don't forget this was his bill. The answer? Ofcand did not receive any request from the above. The request is therefore refused, blah, blah. So not only did nobody come to Ofcand to say, well, you're the experts in this area, have you got a view? They didn't do that. And neither did Ofcand say, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, remember us, we do money laundering, why don't you come and see us? No, they didn't do that either. Gets worse.
It reminds me of the Serious Fraud Office, and because they run a lot of the serious frauds that go on in New Zealand. And Ofcans are supposed to be in charge of money laundering. Something tells me that they wind up laundering a lot of money themselves.
Well, you have to listen to this. When I read you this next bit, it's going to make anyone who's got two brain cells to rub together start questioning very hard. Okay, my third question was, I'm also interested in any information held by Ofcans on how TITO, tickets in, tickets out, can be used for money laundering at casinos. And this is how I understand it works. You take your dirty drug money, you shove it in the machine at Sky City and you get a ticket. You put your ticket back in the machine, you get clean money out the other side. Not very complicated. And their reply was, Ofcans holds no information on this matter. Hang on a minute. They're supposed to be the experts, the lead agency in fighting money laundering. If you look at the regulatory impact statement from the Department of Internal Affairs, they set out the increased risk of money laundering, and this TITO technology, tickets in, tickets out, was a major mechanism for money laundering. I just think Ofcam, they should be sacked.
I mean, they're not off cans, they're just off their nut. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. My very special guest is Penny Bright. Penny Bright, the number four, mayor.org.nz. If you want to send her to the anti-corruption conference where she can get information and mix and mingle, please go to that website and donate. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. You can check out all the archives at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead. Make my news. My very special guest is the indomitable, inimitable, and exposable Penny Bright. And I was thinking, you know, Maybe, Penny, you just might be able to throw a spanner in the works. And I think if everybody's chucking just a little bit of a spanner, you know, some people chucking big spanners, some people chucking little ones, the machine grinds very, very slowly to a halt. And then once it's stopped moving, then all of us can pile on it and take it apart, rip it to shreds, and build us a whole new machine. Something that doesn't suck and rip everybody off.
Good on you, Vinny. Well, just continuing with this, believe it or not, reply from the leading organisation in New Zealand purportedly fighting money laundering, my fourth and final question to Ofcans was, for all or any information held by Ofcans, which raises concerns about the potential increase in organised crime as a result of potentially increased money laundering opportunities through the proposed New Zealand International Convention Centre Bill. Because wouldn't you think, it was easy for criminals just to go down to the money laundering factory down the road and turn their dirty money into clean money, wouldn't you think that would give increased employment opportunities to money launderers and organised criminals? What was the answer?
Can I ask, just what is the proximity between lots of banking institution central offices and political offices to the Sky City Casino? Isn't the main council building, like, not too far from it? Aren't like the heads of National Bank, ASB, Coopers and Lybrand, ANZ, all within walking distance of that facility?
It's all scarily close. But the answer I got from Ofcans was, Ofcom's holds no information on this matter. Good God. Don't forget, they were the ones that got the GCSB to unlawfully spy on Kim.com, and one of the things they charged Kim.com with was money laundering. Seriously. So anyway, I have made sure that this information, this official information, that reply has been passed on to Kim.com and his lawyers, because I'm sure it's actually going to be very useful. So there you go. But, I mean, where it gets unbelievable is this New Zealand International Convention Centre, i.e. Sky City Money Laundering Bill, was railroaded through Parliament on Tuesday night. Now, what really gets me about that is that I am still awaiting Official Information Act replies from Trader, Prime Minister John Key, and Stephen Joyce, the Minister of Economic Development, who was the minister that introduced this bill, because I asked both of them under the Official Information Act, please provide the information which explains why due diligence was not done by Ofcom's. And the legislation's been railroaded through, and it's just awaiting the royal assent from the Governor-General, but they never replied to that question. Meanwhile, what else have I discovered? I've discovered that Auckland Council, they never did any due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering. And it's all there on my website. Just troll down. You can read the whole nine yards. It's all information that applies.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Russell Malcolm case, but the I think it was the Rodney District Council. He was trying to get consent for a minor dwelling, and they told him, if you give us an off the books $25,000 donation, we'll put your application through, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's think about this. Maybe council's doing this to not just Russell Malcolm. Maybe it's actually rather widespread. And maybe since the Super City, even more so, because perhaps the Auckland City Council, this is just me theorising here, of course. I've got no evidence to support my claim per se. But maybe the Auckland City Council is, in fact, taking bribes on a much larger scale now across the city, and they needed a central hub to launder all their money.
Look, honestly, the truth is stranger than fiction, but the way to expose corruption is transparency. That's why if people have a look on my website, pennybrightformayor.org.nz, look at Action Plan, and that's that one-page action plan which would actually establish a genuine framework for transparency.
Well, see, you're the one who's actually far more keen on transparency, because, as I recall, Transparency International kicked you out of their conference once because you were too transparent for them.
Well, the thing is that's the rub. I mean, Transparency International New Zealand, in my considered opinion, it's the old boy, old girl network who have an absolute vested interest in perpetrating this myth and fraud that New Zealand is the least corrupt country in the world. And you know why? Because it's good for trade. It's something that is marketable, and it means dough. So the last thing a rubber stampy, fig leafy sort of organisation wants is genuine anti-corruption, pro-transparency campaigner. So what happened was, this was back in November 2009, and what happened was that I, Vince Emer and Grace Hayden, we all applied to be members of Transparency International New Zealand. They took my money, but they were still dithering around whether or not they wanted me as a member, because they didn't really, but they didn't quite know how to tell me. And Vince and Grace had been declined. But then what happened was that Transparency International New Zealand in 2009 at the AGM, they broadened the who could come. You didn't have to be a member. You just had to ask, because the key speaker was going to be Chris Finlayson, the Attorney General. So we asked nicely if we could come along, and we were declined. So me, Grace and Vince all jumped on a plane from Auckland to Wellington and gate crashed it. And what happened was, I mean, it was filmed, and here's me trying to get through the door, and the CEO, the then CEO of Transparency International, Penny Bright, you can't come in here anyway. We just pushed our way in. And cut long story short, they called the cops, And, I mean, others, apart from me and Vince, we took it to the point of arrest. And so that was it. And, I mean, what happened in the end was Tony Ellis, top human rights lawyer, I mean, he took the case. The cops ended up dropping it. But what happened was in 2009, when I went to the Transparency International conference, I potted Transparency International New Zealand because I took hundreds of copies of a two-sided leaflet, and on one side was the corruption reality checklist for New Zealand, and on the other side was the article Vince had written with the photograph Grace had taken of the cops arresting me and Vince. And, I mean, I passed that round to over 400 delegates, and so I potted Transparency International New Zealand within the Transparency International conference, and what happened was I said, I want an inquiry. You know, this is not okay. And so what happened in the end that this former CEO of Transparency International New Zealand, he ended up leaving. But that organisation, in my opinion, their proven track record shows that they're not doing anything that's really helping to rattle the cage about corruption. What they're trying to do is to effectively defend the indefensible and maintain this myth and rot that we're the least corrupt country in the world, and we are not.
I was thinking we're kind of an upside down land, so everything's a direct opposite of what its stated intention is. So if we're Transparency International, well, they say they're all about transparency, therefore they must be about covering up corruption and making things as untransparent as humanly freaking possible. Oh, the police. Okay, the police are there to ensure that people get justice and protected. So therefore their job is obviously to beat up innocent people and to ensure that nobody gets any justice, especially corrupt people. And the judiciary is there to make sure that accurate judgments and evidence are actually presented so that people don't go to jail when they're innocent. So naturally their job is to jail innocent people on zero evidence. You know, you see what I'm saying? This is the effect. I think I'm not talking about like 100%. This is the only thing that goes on. Like, I'm sure that there's maybe, I don't know, one case out of 100 where it's not 100% corrupt, I guess. Maybe I'm just being freaking cynical because I've seen so much shockingly bad, terrible things happen to people over the time.
The thing is that that's why I do believe that you do need a legislative framework. I mean, I never used to be so hot on the rule of law as such, but I mean, especially as given how I was treated by some so-called activists last year, it really hit home to me that unless you've got clear guidelines there, you know, clear sort of rules, and people just can't make it up, that, I just now believe that what you need good law, but the rule of law, so it's there and everyone knows what it is and people are held accountable to it rather than that it's there, but the people who are supposed to enforce it or implement it, they don't take the slightest bit of notice of it and they just make it up. Well, that's not okay. That's not okay. And the other development was that myself and my friend Lisa Prager, you know Lisa, we actually had a meeting this Monday with the top cop in Auckland, the Auckland District Commander, Superintendent Michael Clements, because when I did an Official Information Act request to the Superintendent asking, well, what due diligence had Auckland Central Police done on the increased risk of money laundering, given that Auckland Central Police are the ones in whose patch this money laundering factory is being set up. And the response that I got from the top cop in Auckland Central was, no, they didn't have any information either. So, and that same applies to Auckland Council. They never did any due diligence either. So, good God. So from the Prime Minister down, we have absolutely no due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering. And what I've got is an absolute paper trail from hell, but it's all documented. You know me, Vinny, I do my homework, and the homework's there for the people to see. But if you want to have a read of this, because no mainstream media have covered this story yet, and if you want to see the hard facts and evidence, just go and have a look on the website. It's all there. Just keep reading.
You'll never find... you'll never find the hard facts and evidence being released by mainstream media, especially not on an issue as poignant as this. And I especially won't tell you that John Key himself used to be virtually a money launderer when he sold derivatives as part of Merrill Lynch's mob on the board of the Federal Reserve for 2 years, or that he hollowed out the Irish economy while he was working for Merrill Lynch selling derivatives. You see, you know what I'm saying? If anybody would know about money laundering, don't you think it'd be a guy who has $50 million in a blind trust that nobody can look at?
Well, I mean, that's what I do. Where I do agree with David Cunliffe is that his nickname for Prime Minister John Key being Trader John, I believe that is very apt, and it should prove to be very sticky, as it were. And that's what I intend to use, because that's the reality, that we know that John Key is an insider trader because he tried that when he was before he was
Kiwi Rail.
Transrail. That's exactly right. He not only failed to disclose his pecuniary interest when it was an item of business before the House, but he tried to flush out commercially sensitive information.
He asked the Ombudsman, didn't he?
What happened was Michael Cullen was the treasurer, and on the advice of Treasury, Michael Cullen refused to release this commercially sensitive information, and then John Key made a complaint to the Ombudsman. And so here's me back in. I mean, you did a YouTube clip of that. Is John Key shonky? And I think that shonky John Key wording came from then. Back in 2008, before the election, made a complaint to the Police and Serious Fraud Office, who, in their customary fashion, refused to lift a finger. And on the advice of a top QC, I know I took a private prosecution against John Key. And none of this got one sentence in the Herald, because in 2008, mainstream corporate media were trying to discredit Winston Peter and New Zealand First so that they didn't get the 5% threshold, which worked. You know, I think about 4.8% or whatever. But, I mean, that was the campaign. So while Rodney Hyde got front-page man-on-the-moon headlines when he made a complaint against New Zealand First to Serious Fraud, massive headlines, I make a similar complaint to the Serious Fraud Office against John Key, not one sentence. And you and I know, Vinny, because you and I spent 3 afternoons going through page after page after page of the New Zealand Herald archives and the Auckland Public Library to check the facts for ourselves, and we found out there was not one sentence in the main newspaper in New Zealand about this Transrail.
I managed to put about maybe 5% of those images that we captured at the Central Library into a video across Winston Peters talking about the debacle, about all of this defamation campaign and so on and so forth. It was, every single issue of the Herald, I think, was Labor's going out, John Key's coming in, Winston Peters is corrupt. Labor's going out, John Key's coming in, Winston Peters is corrupt. Labor's going out, John Key's coming in, Winston Peters is corrupt. So on and so forth. It was unbelievable because you see it in the media, okay, and you see it day by day. So if it happens once a day and you see it, it's like, okay. But when you're sitting there and you're flipping through all the back catalogue and you see how it's happening every single day, and you're accumulating that realisation right in the moment, and it doesn't take a day to accrue each and every story, it became so shocking to me about how obvious the defamation campaign was, and more to the point, the substance of the articles was so lacking. Now, what occurred to me is that Winston Peters made a hell of a lot of enemies during the wine box inquiry. He figured out that there were a whole bunch of people in New Zealand dodging tax, right? Corrupt scum. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Crossed the deserts bare, man. man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Talk about Johnny Cash and Johnny Come Latelys, and there he is. And they've been everywhere, man. My very special guest is Penny Bright, and you want to talk about a new fledgling politician who has organised a couple of protests and is a millionaire property developer, Mr. Colin Craig. What have you got to say about him, Penny?
Well, back in 2010, we were both Auckland mayoral candidates, and Colin Craig, in terms of, well, what's his proven track record of having done anything for the public? Well, he's organised a couple of not hugely successful marches, but that's about it. And what got me on the mayoral campaign, I mean, again, same with this John Polino, who was a mayoral candidate. This time, these Johnny Cashes have got all this money to splash around, but they've got no proven track record. And, I mean, it really irritated the hell out of me. I've had now over 15 years experience in local government politics. I mean, I can point a stick at things that, you know, where we've helped to make improvements. But no, they just want to talk to the ones with the money. And, so with Colin Craig, what's really interesting is back in 2010, on the issue of water privatisation, I asked him to his face, did he agree with the 35-year long-term private water contracts? And he said no, he didn't agree with 35-year long-term water contracts, but he agreed with 5-year private water contracts. Well, it's like being a little bit pregnant. You know, I mean, that's still supporting water privatisation. Yet what Colin Craig and his Conservative Party are doing is they poll people, they find out what people want, and then regurgitate back what people want to hear. And in my considered opinion, one of the roles of the Conservative Party is to try to suck votes away from New Zealand First. And, of course, opposition to asset sales is quite key here. But I'm not saying this to Colin Craig's face. Colin, how much can you be trusted in your purported opposition to asset sales when you in 2010 told me to your face you agreed with privatised water contracts? Because he did. Sorry. But that's a fact.
Well, let me make an assumption here, a speculation, if you will. He's putting himself in place so that they can undermine currently one of New Zealand's strongest parties that is anti-privatisation, claiming that they are anti-privatisation while at the same time supporting it and wanting to work with other parties that support it. Does that ring true as the ultimate bait and switch?
Well, the reality is that this national government, they are very short on political allies, and under our New Zealand system of this proportional representation model, MMP, what it means is that you're very unlikely to get the number of votes to govern alone, so you need to have political allies. Well, of course, the ACT Party, with the not-so-honourable John Banks, who, let's remember, is facing a trial for electoral fraud, and so why the hell he's still even in Parliament at this stage is unbelievable. And
it's not just John Banks that's still in Parliament, despite the fact that he's going to trial for being a criminal. There's also Peter Dunne, another very minor person as a part of the party, who doesn't even have enough party members to qualify as a party. So he shouldn't be in Parliament. John Banks shouldn't be in Parliament either.
Well, Peter Dunne, that they've apparently United Futures have since got their 500 registered members. But the fact of the matter is that Well, John Banks is absolutely gone. What's happening next on the John Banks case is that on the 27th of November, there's a judicial review, because talk about dance on the head of a pin. This is where John Banks' QC is trying to get a judicial review in the Auckland High Court on on the decision of District Court Judge Gittos, which committed John Banks to trial. So rather than trumping in over the top with an appeal, they're sort of coming in sideways with a judicial review. I'll be in Australia at that time, but there will be a demonstration outside the Auckland High Court from about 9 o'clock. But I mean, it's a really big deal, because if people in New Zealand are listening, they will remember that former Cabinet Minister Richard Wirth, National Party Cabinet Minister Richard Wirth, and National Party Cabinet Minister Pansy Wong, they both left Parliament under a cloud. They weren't just relieved of their ministerial warrants, they left Parliament. John Banks is the defendant. John Banks is facing a trial for electoral fraud, and he's still in Parliament. But the least corrupt country in the world, did I mention that we're supposed to be the least corrupt country in the world? And don't forget, one of the things why John Banks is in court is because he got a donation of $15,000 from Sky City, which he failed to declare. Talk about conflict of interest. Don't forget that one. And yet John Banks still got to vote on helping to railroad through the New Zealand International Convention Centre, i.e. Sky City, money laundering bill for its third and final reading this Tuesday just gone. How the hell?
Fucking hell, Penny. We'd be better off under Robert Mugabe.
No, seriously, you just couldn't make this sort of stuff up. But trust me, I mean, I've got all the paper trail there, and I'm going to have such fun in Australia. So help me get. I mean, I've got, like I said, I've got my plane ticket booked, but it is $2,000 to get inside. So folks, 150 people, if you're listening, if you give us $20 each, or if you can afford a bit more, this is an investment in fighting corruption, and your money will not be wasted. It will not.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. You always say to people that you run off the smell of an oily rag. It's the whiff of a hint of an oily rag.
I'm lucky enough to have a freehold house. It's $320 a week that I get from flatmates, which for a 40-hour week is $8 an hour. So I'm not doing this for the money.
Yeah. Well, I think reason why you have your freehold house is because you used to work as a welding tutor. You were expert in quality assurance, which I'm sure in no small part has actually prepared you for this role of being in my opinion, one of the top anti-corruption watchdogs in the country, because you can be assured that quality doesn't frickin' exist, not in this government anyway.
Well, I mean, it's funny how we, as you go through life, skills you learn in one area can be really appropriate in another. That's why I think I don't find the legal stuff hard. I mean, I've never been to university. I've never had a day's formal legal training in my life, but I'm quite a successful lay litigant. But because back in my quality assurance days, I used to be one of the rare breed who read the spec, read the codes, you know, actually checked, well, and tried to make sure that what we said we were going to do in terms of making sure the job was going to be built in a proper way, followed through on that. So I've got a good grasp of process, and that's it. With the law, just read it for yourself. It's not that hard. Just read it. Have a go.
Yep. And lastly, Penny, I just wanted to kind of just thank you just in general for your efforts, because you've been an activist, what, since the late 60s, early 70s, you get into your 40th year of political activism. And throughout that time, the amount of knowledge of this country that you've actually accumulated, you've almost become an authority, almost a historian on scumbaggery in New Zealand. And I want to just thank you, you know, from the bottom of my heart, for exposing said scumbaggery.
Well, thanks for that. I mean, we, as you know, we very sadly lost two very helpful people who've been helping the public for years, and that's John Duncan and also Vapi Kupinga. And when I gave a little tribute to Vapi on Radio Wāti, as I was saying the words, it sunk into me. She will leave, is leaving a big hole because of all her knowledge and experience. And same with John. But it's like, oh my God, well, before we all pop our clogs, it's probably not a bad idea to try and get this information over to a lot of younger activists, so they don't have to take 50 years to learn what we learned. I mean, that's
well,
why
I
you're
seem
so,
to...
so good, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking as you said that, John was always coming to public meetings and stuff and filming them. Now I'm going to all the public protests and public meetings and filming them, but I'm doing what something that John wasn't doing was putting them up online. Vapi was doing one day a week of radio, and there weren't any archives for that radio show. She was doing an incredible show, and the fact of the matter is you could either listen live or that was it. And so what I'm doing with my show and what I do as a political activist, I'm both replacing and improving those skills that John and Vapi previously provided, you know. And I do this now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to honour their memory by doing what they could do, what they would be doing had they my skill set. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. And that's the other thing too is to help share the skill set, because, I mean, I've got knowledge and experience I can pass on. I mean, you know, technologically, well, I can do emails and I can send texts, but, you know, it doesn't go a lot further than that. But I need to get up to speed on that sort of stuff as well. So it's sort of exchanging information and how we can help each, you know, not just each other, but I'm talking more generally here, because, I mean, every single person has no idea how much personal, like power and influence you can have in terms of what you can do for the public, because everyone's the centre of a little universe. You've got friends, you've got family, you've got email, you've got text, you've got Facebook.
Well, and we've got to go. Thank you very much, Penny. I'll see you again sometime.